five counties, one big sports show.
Sports Beat Roundup.
We start our review with the story of an incredible 12-year-old who has had to overcome plenty to stand where she does today. Chloe Black took up Muay Thai after the bullying she received in school, and having taken up boxing, was then denied a chance to fight for a national title due to politics within the sport. Two world silver medals later, and Black is still training away at Carlow Muay Thai Gym in Bagnallstown, where we met her at the start of November.
My brother was doing it, and I was always told, come on, give it a try, and I never kind of went, yeah, let's do it. It was kind of a, yeah, okay, I'll do it next week. And then I started to get bullied, and then my dad was like, sure, give it one more go. If you don't like it, you don't have to do it no more. I won't make you. And then I just did it one Saturday morning, and that was it. I couldn't stop doing it.
It must be amazing, though, the fact that you picked it up because of stuff that was going on in school, but to be able to, just the confidence it must give you to say, yeah, like, you know, I can protect myself, I can defend myself if I need to.
Yeah, like, it's great. Like, when I was in second class, you could say, I couldn't talk to anyone. I couldn't even talk to my best friend without going all red and sweating and everything. And now, like, in class, I'm shouting out and, like, I'm told to be quiet, and it's, like, completely different. And, like, everyone's like, I'm coming down to spare you. And it's kind of, yeah, go on, try me, you know, that kind of way. Like, I have way more confidence, and it's absolutely unbelievable. It's, like, something that you hear on the news, like, something like a miracle or something. Like, I never thought I'd get that much confidence.
Just tell us about the last championships as well, and how that all went for you.
Like, it's great to be able to say that I'm ranked second best in the world for 2 years in a row. Like, this year I stopped a Greece girl in the third round, and that put me over the moon to be able to stop someone in the world championships. Like, when you're in the world championships in Muay Thai, it's a complete different level to kickboxing and taekwondo and boxing. It's, like, hard. Like, if you stop someone, like, you might as well get the gold medal, that kind of way. And then to come second, like, is something unbelievable.
Yeah.
That kind of, to win a silver medal.
Very hard work.
Like.
Really hard work, yeah. But, I mean, as you say, you won the first one. That must have given you massive confidence. Then for the rest of the year, you want to just keep going and push towards the next one.
Okay, winning it is kind of like, oh, my God, wow. And then, like, losing it is kind of, it's really disappointing. But, like, you can't do anything after the hands are raised. Yeah. And then you just have to push forward and come back faster, stronger and harder.
You're obviously flanked by a great support team. Your dad, Eric, has been with you all the way. Eric, just tell us a little bit about, I mean, we just talked about Chloe's, not even just sporting-wise, but just as a person, what Muay Thai has given her, the confidence it's given her. As a dad, you must be so happy to see what a brilliant young woman she's developed into.
Oh, extremely. Like, you can see yourself, she's just bubbly now and all compared to what she was a few years ago. It's amazing, like, the change in her. Like, John will tell you, the first night she came in, the brutal, her brother Alfie that's out there came in and he was wired. They're totally different.
Yeah.
But it has the opposite effect on Alfie. Alfie's calmed down. He's out there skipping at the minute.
He's very good, yeah.
Yeah.
Alfie, like, is very same. He's trying to catch up on Chloe, like, you know.
Yeah.
And just, she sort of looked up to now, like, in the main girl in the club. And the main person, really, you know, to say, her age, like, you know.
Yeah.
To get to Chloe's level, the commitment is unreal.
Oh, it's unreal.
Like, the kids out there, they're enjoying it, they're having it fun.
Mm.
But come the time they come to the international, they're going to have to give that bit more.
Oh, true.
This is all Chloe does. She loves it. We tried the boxing, but that's another story.
Yeah, well, it's a story that we want to talk about as well. And my next question, natural question, was, I mean, the whole thing that happened this year was massively disappointing. And like, where does it stand now for her?
The biggest thing that we think, Chloe picked her own club. Not against Tolo. Tolo done everything in her power. But it's because she didn't go to one of the bigger clubs. We'd fight her there, fighting out of Paulstown, fighting out of a tie. And there was never a bother.
Mm.
But Chloe went to a small club and
she was basically picked on.
She was too good, and it was jealousy. Like, they couldn't touch her in the boxing. She was naturally gifted in the sports. It's just, she trained, she relaxed in the Muay Thai for a bit and went to Tola and was doing the boxing, and she was flat out. And the night's off, she was here. She was constantly training.
Yes.
She wants to be the best.
Chloe, how did you feel after that? It must have been, as you said, heartbreaking was the word you used, I think.
Yeah, like, it is heartbreaking to be told, yeah, Chloe, you're able to fight and be all excited, and then, no, you're not, yes, you are. It's confusing, like, and all I wanted to do was fight. Like, the fight could have went either way. Like, I didn't care which way it went. I just wanted to get injured and fight.
Mm.
I would have preferred to fight and lose then be told, oh yeah, no, you can't fight, you're too good, you know, that kind of way. It's not fair. And like, I know a lot of the girls there, and a lot of girls text me after it, but I'm a kickboxer, but I didn't get stopped. I was asked to make a complaint about one of the girls, and one of the girls I was really close to, so I wasn't going to do it. Like, I was in tears that night, and I wasn't going to make another girl cry tears when I know she could have had the glory of winning an Irish title. It's not fair. Like, if I believe I'm the best and I want to train to be the best, and that's what a lot of people can't get over. Like, you have to train to be the best. You can't just be the best overnight. You can't say, you can't make a girl stop fighting so your girl can be the best. If the girl's not the best, she has to train to be better.
Yeah.
And it's just the girl that made the complaint, I stopped her daughter twice. I didn't stop her now, actually. I just bet her twice in the same competition. And it was just jealousy. Like, she could have fought me the next time and bet my head around the place. You really don't know. Like, there's no point, and I don't want to go back to boxing and fighting. Like, I'll train, no bothers, but I don't want to because I don't think I'll get a fair fair deal. Like, there's... Like, they're all going to have me. Like, I could have went to one of the biggest clubs in Ireland and fought my way, still be fighting, be in New York right now fighting. But I didn't want to, like, I stuck with the club that I started with, and I just didn't want to stop. Like, it would be like me leaving my Muay Thai gym and going down to Waterford or going up to Dublin. Like, it's just not fair. Like, they've taught me my sport. I'm not going to fight for a different club.
Eric, how do you explain that to your daughter when something like that happens, that kind of politics almost?
How can you? Like, she understands, I think, better than me, because I was bullied. It's the fact that there was other people, and still other people, this is the thing that we've the problem with. If there's a rule, that we disagree with the rule, but should they not enforce the rule? Like, one rule for one's fair. They just took a girl out, just out of jealousy.
So, yeah, did that give you extra motivation after the whole thing that happened with the boxing? The next time you went out and you were like, okay, well, I'm going for the Muay Thai now, I don't want to be bet by anybody.
Yeah, like, I retired, you could say, from boxing.
Yeah,
with a perfect record, and now, like, all I can say is I have a perfect record in boxing, and now I'm going to push towards my Muay Thai more and train harder for Muay Thai. And, like, I can always say I've stopped so many girls in boxing, I have a perfect record, and now I want to make my Muay Thai record perfect, you know, that kind of way. I want to be recognised as one of the best in the world.
If the rules were changed and it was a case where teens up to a certain age were allowed to fight both, would you go back to it, do you think?
That would be up to Chloe.
Yeah.
For the boxer, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Kind of.
The one thing that's putting me off going back fighting is some people are just going to go, oh yeah, that's the girl that got stopped from fighting because she was too good. I don't want my girl to go against her. And they're enforcing a new rule now, apparently, that if the boxer is too good, the good boxer will get pulled. So the weaker boxer will win, which isn't fair. Like, if you're the better boxer, you should win. It's the logic.
Like, we could understand if these were novice competitions, like, but this was an All-Ireland. And they're saying Chloe does so many fights. But, like, all these other boxers go sparring, they go to inter-club boxing fights. Like, we've a record of every fight Chloe ever had. You know, they're all on paper with medical checks.
I'm just interested to know, has there been any communication from the AIBA in terms of, since this has happened, about what's going on?
Tolo have tried everything, but they're getting very limited answers. The child safety officer has not contacted me, Rachel, my wife, or Chloe yet. So that should have been the first port call if they're worried about child safety. It's one rule for one and one rule for the other.
Just, Chloe, I suppose, from your perspective, what's the plan? What's the ambition? I mean, we're talking about the Olympics in 2024. That must be a thought in the back of your mind. What else are you hoping to achieve over the next... Just where would you like to be?
Well, I'm definitely hoping for gold at the Olympics. That's always been my dream. But, like, I'm working bit by bit. Like, I'm aiming for gold in Lithuania, gold in the Netherlands, gold in Malaysia, gold all the way up until the Olympics, maybe the odd silver. But, like, I'm going to push myself to be the next big thing.
Crouch, bind, set. Sportsbeat Roundup.
Ireland's Rugby World Cup campaign may have been a disappointment in the end, beaten at the quarter-final stage once again by New Zealand and Japan. However, for Wexford's Tadhg Furlong, it was a superb tournament with 2 tries in 5 matches, 23 carries and putting in some brilliant displays in the Far East. We met his former teammates and coaches at New Ross Rugby Club, who are always immensely proud of the 27-year-old.
we're all very proud, really, I suppose. I think we saw a stat in the first half of the game on last weekend, and he was the most offensive player on the field. He beat more players and gained more metres than anyone else in the pitch, and he's a tight head prop, you know. So that's a great issue. I know it's only a little subplot within the game, but still for him, you know, a revelation. I think he's already a revelation, really. I think since the Lions tour, really, everyone kind of knows who he is. But yeah, for sure, in this World Cup, he's definitely shown up. And for me personally, it's fantastic to see him. You know, we're always rooting for him. I was roaring him at work on Saturday, watching the match on my phone. Jumped up when he went over the line, and they were all looking at me going, "What is wrong with this fella?" You know. So yeah, look, personally, it's fantastic and absolutely delighted to see him go so well, and long may it continue, really, on Saturday especially.
Just from your experience, like, how did you get to know him first playing rugby, and tell us a little bit about ye growing up, and not just him, but just the team in general. It must have been a pretty successful side.
Yeah, I first met Tadhg through playing rugby. I started playing rugby, I went to secondary school. He's from the next parish to me, but I didn't know him apart from that. We started playing and we became very good friends. We have the same circle, especially later on in school. We're in the same year in school, kind of TY, fifth, sixth year. We became good mates. We played together all the way up through the ages. We had a very successful team under 19s. Our final year together, we finally clicked. We won a Leinster Premier A title that had eluded us for a long, long time. So Tadhg was obviously a core to that, still tight head that time, and he dabbled a bit between number 8 and tight head underage, depending on the opposition, really, I think, and how strong their front row was. But once he got into the kind of Leinster development squads and then the Irish youths, and, you know, he took 2 weeks off school before Armagh, like, to go to the under 18 World Cup, which wasn't great for the leaving cert, I suppose, but, you know, what an opportunity he got. And he actually captained the, I believe the following year, he captained an Ireland team at a European competition. So yeah, look, personally, I know him well. Look, we were at a wedding there during the summer. He came down for it, totally relaxed. He's great crack. When he comes home, he likes to switch off a bit from the rugby and takes a bit of abuse from us and throws it back. And, you know, we always try to meet up as much as we can, especially when he's home. He doesn't have that much downtime. So look, he loves to get home. In fairness, we like to cheer the life of him when he is here. He gets away with very little now with our group, you know. So, but yeah, I know him a long, long time. He almost broke the mould from that point of view. There were very few guys had come up through the clubs without playing for a big school before him, really. You could count them on one or two, and they were from the Southeast as well. You know, Jackman O'Brien. There was a couple that weren't involved in schools, Dublin schools, basically. But I think he couldn't be ignored. From 16 up, he was very obviously better than someone, you know. He progressed through so quickly. You know, we were barely out of college, or barely in college, and he was playing Leinster games, you know, when during the Six Nations we were, oh Christ, he's on the bench for Leinster, you know. And it progressed very quickly for him. But yeah, to come from where we're sitting now, you know, New Ross, a relatively small young club, to where he is now, what a credit to the club and to, I suppose, to the system, that he defeated the odds, essentially, to get ahead of guys who maybe on paper should have been ahead of him. But, you know, I'd say he broke the glass ceiling and pushed on. So anytime he does pop up, young lads especially, if he pops up on a Saturday, everybody wants to see him. You know, he's so giving with his time. Like, he will sign something for everyone, smile to everyone, chat to everyone, throw a ball around with young lads if he has 5 minutes. But yeah, I mean, he's a great ambassador for our club. And it's a great, exactly what you said, I can do that. You know, like you said, he broke that glass ceiling. So if he can do it, why can't I do it? And that's great. That is fantastic aiming point for young guys now coming up. You know, that stigma is gone. Tadhg Furlong's from New Ross. He's playing for Ireland. I can do that, you know. And why not? That's great. And what a way to be, and what a way to have changed. And like you said, sure, it's unreal, really, like that aiming point.
And as Kieran said earlier, he's available to come to the club, present jerseys, get involved in fun runs, you know. So he's very much part of the club, as is his father and mother. You know, they're a very important part in the way Tadhg developed as well. You wouldn't want to forget, as I often say to his father, he put 400,000 kilometres on a car bringing him to train over a couple of years, and that's a fact.
I remember playing against Arklow in Uras. He was 14 years of age. He was playing number 8. And I remember the Arklow scrum half got the ball and he came around and he ran into Tadhg. And instead of Tadhg taking the ball off him, he actually picked the young fella up and ran with the young fella as well. So he had your man, as I would say, your man ball and all. And he going down the field with him. So I mean, when you're looking at that going, jeez, that's something special with this fella here, you know. Yeah, but we're chuffed, as much as saying. As I said, I go back, like Peter here, I go back with the parents. I knew Tig before he was born, put it that way. We would have been, Rosemary and I would have been very friendly, and still are with Mac and James. And certainly from their end of it. They have another young fella called Owen, and he's better mention Owen as well. He's a prolific musician. But I mean, the two lads at home, I travel a fair bit with them to games, and they know that this is a very short journey. Yeah. As I would say, it's a window of opportunity that they have,
yeah,
and they're enjoying it because it doesn't last forever, and they're making the most of it, and well, they deserve it, absolutely. The time and effort that both of them have put in to trucking that fella up and down to Dublin. Tig, in fairness, from the parents' end of it, would be very grounded. Even at 8s, 10s, 12s or 14s, before Tig had made it onto the bigger stage, you know, he hasn't changed a huge amount. You know, he's just got bigger, that's all. Bigger and better. And I'm talking about Tig now, not the father. But I mean, I think from a club end of it, we're a family club. You know, as I said, you play, you pray, and you stay with your ass. And you know what? It's just lovely to see a well-balanced, grounded young fella achieve the success that he has and still be able to come back and walk into a club, as he did with our AGM this year. Walked into the club and he sat down on the first bench, left-hand side, looked up and made a couple of comments. And it was great.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't know of any other kind of international might go to the AGM and come down, you know. So yeah. I know we're delighted. Thrilled with him. Thrilled.
My first memory of Tig would be, I can remember it well, we went to a under-8 blitz in Carlow, and this was my first involvement with kids. My own sons were playing as well. And this little squeaky voice chirped up from a seat that, hey, mister, will you tie me shoelaces? So I looked around. It was Tig. So I also think that that's probably the only thing I ever taught him was how to tie his shoelaces. In fact, I'd be very happy that he's quickly forgot anything else I ever taught him, because if he was playing the way I had taught him, he'd still be with the seconds in New Ross. So that's my first memory of him, as a squeaky little 6 or 7 year old playing under eights. And he was, I described him as a human cannonball. He could destroy players even at that age. He knew how to use his power. He knew how to use his strength. He played with his head rather than with his heart. He had natural skills with his hands and with his feet. It's worth noting that Matthew O'Hanlon, the current Wexford hurling captain, was on that team. Mick Furlong, the current Wexford senior football captain, was on that team. David Sun played Irish Utes. Kieran Butler played Irish Utes. John Sutton got two caps for Ireland clubs this year. So my own son was an inter-pro swimmer at that time. It was a very, very talented group of athletes. But even within that group of athletes, Tig stood out all the way from under-8 up to under-19 as the best rugby player. But what I've seen is a graduated development. It's almost, I've seen Tig play for Ireland as if he's being restrained, as if he's been told there are things you are not to do. But every year his game has developed, and even this year now, I used to always give out to him because he wasn't scoring enough tries. I knew he could score more tries. This year he scored 3 tries very recently, yeah, and he's showing other little skills that I saw when he was a 10-year-old to a 14-year-old, little chips through, one-handed catches in lineouts. So the skills that were innate in him as a kid, they're coming more and more out in him now as an adult. It's like Joe Schmidt is letting him a little bit more off the leash every time he goes out and plays. And I believe now, I believe, yes, he is the best tight head prop in the world, but I actually don't believe he's the best that he can be yet.
Sports Beat Roundup on Beat 102-103.
It's not always serious here on Sportsbeat, however, with one story of a PSNI evading centre-forward, putting myself and Chris Ward in knots back in September. My favourite story of 2019, I think, is this one. Right?
Well, that's a big claim now, Kevin.
If I have something that tops it, then I will be very surprised. It comes from, again, from Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah.
And this only dropped down Saturday evening, and I was like, oh, this would have been so good last week, but I thought, it's so good, we've got to keep it this week.
Okay, right.
So last week,
really hyping this one up.
Yeah, 24-year-old Lukasz Gwidaza, he's a Polish player who's playing with Bangor Town.
Okay.
He was due to appear at the Ards Magistrates Court for a number of driving offences. Now, he never turned up,
yeah,
so there was an arrest warrant out for him that week. So Lukasz
went on and played with Bangor on the Saturday, scored the winner for Bangor Town. Yeah. And who were they playing on the Saturday? The PSNI. Actual
you
PSNI
are kidding
team.
Me.
Then there's a clip of him running
what?
Away and celebrating. All the coppers that were out looking for him.
Oh my god. Did he not piece two and two together like that?
How did he end up playing? That's what I love to know. Like, how did they not arrest him before? Like, oh, that's the guy. He literally turned up against the team, against the official PSNI team.
What, it was some sort of charity match or
something? No, it was a league game. It was like a normal league game and scored the winner and then wheeled away and celebrated and all the boys running after him. Can you imagine?
God.
Yeah,
okay.
That is my favourite.
You were right
story
to hype that one up. And did they arrest him afterwards?
Absolutely. There was nothing said about whether he was arrested afterwards or whether he's going to be due back in court or
like,
whatever.
Like, maybe, assuming he was just like, I forgot the date and I'm going to do the thing anyway.
Maybe, I don't know. I'd love the fact that he scored the winner as well.
Yeah,
he didn't even, he didn't even just score, he scored the winner against them. Like, talk about insult to injury.
Yeah. Sports Beat Roundup on Beat
102-103. That's all from Sports Beat Roundup for today and indeed 2019. We hope you've enjoyed the show this year and are having a brilliant festive period. We'll be back next week for our first Sports Beat Roundup of 2020, including a look forward to our Beat Southeast Sports Star of the Year Awards. But until then, have a very happy new year with Beat Anthems coming your way next.